joining us right now is the candidate for Abbotsford South for the Liberal Party, Bruce Badman. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Badman.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure as always.
All right. I first want to start off by asking you, what got you interested in politics and why the Liberal Party?
Well, you know, my family was always interested in politics, or at least we had the discussion around the table. But what really got me going was before I ran to be the mayor back in 2011. I'm a chiropractor. I for those that don't know, or I'm now retired, but every now and again, the discussion of politics would come up with certain patients. And I was, as was the patient, expressing our displeasure with what we didn't think was really going right in Abbotsford and how they were spending money. That was not long after Plan A, for those of you that don't remember that. And he said a very interesting thing to me. He said, you know, you're basically saying what a lot of people are saying. Why don't you run? And I said, nah, come on. And he said, no. He said, seriously, you have the ability to talk in front of a group. He says, I've seen you. He said, why don't you? And I came home and I talked to my wife that night, and she said, well, why don't you? Indeed. And she reminded me that I always had this sort of expression that you can either sit on the sidelines and complain, or you can get involved and try and fix it and become part of the solution. So I put my name forward. And lo and behold, much to the surprise of myself and many others, I actually won on my first attempt and I became the mayor. So that was sort of it. But politics was always part of the family discussion. And they went, you know, the family had broad spectrum from either NDP to conservative. And I miss those dinner table discussions a lot. Many of them aren't here anymore. And I think it was sort of a teething ground for where I ended up.
Okay. And as you know, the COVID crisis, COVID-19, is an issue not only in British Columbia or Canada, but worldwide.
Yeah.
The BC government is recognized for doing a pretty good job. What would you say needs to be done differently, if anything at all?
Well, you know, I think number one is that somebody has to be in charge. There has to be an umpire for every sports game, to use that as an analogy. And the calls of the umpire need to be respected. So the calls of Dr. Bonnie need to be respected. Whether I personally agree with them or not, or whether we agree with them or not, she is in uncharted waters. It has been proven that she has done a phenomenal job of keeping us healthy and well. And the numbers until recently have been maintained and low. And when you look at other parts of the world, we're still low. So I think number one you have to do is, you know, and I would remind us, it was actually under the Liberal watch where Dr. Bonnie got hired. But I think she's done a phenomenal job. Do I agree with every one of her calls? Not necessarily, but I respect her authority. And moving forward, I think we're in good hands. What I worry about is what we're going to be left from an economy worldwide when COVID is over. I watch some, especially in the hospitality and in the tourism industry. There's been winners and losers in this, and the ones that have not fared so well, I look forward to how we can help those industries get back up on their feet after this is all over.
Mm-hmm. COVID-19 is making a comeback. In some parts of the world, it's a second wave. In some parts like America, they're bringing it the third time. And as you know, when it first hit in February or March, globally, the government around the world also faced an economic crisis, like you mentioned. To deal with that, they started giving stimulus packages. Do you think British Columbia needs to think hard in giving a second stimulus package?
Well, I think we do, but I think it's interesting to take a look at what that stimulus package is. And from the Liberal government perspective, what we've put forward is a 0% for PST and removing the 2% small business tax. And I think that's important for the following. When I was the mayor, and I was a small business owner myself, but, you know, I learned that a small business has 6 times the economic impact in your local economy as a large business. And let me kind of explain why. Large businesses or corporations or big box stores, those profits disappear outside of your community. Whereas with smaller businesses, and 80% of businesses in British Columbia are considered to be small business where they have 100 or less employees, the vast majority have 5 or less. So it becomes vital that we help those small businesses because they're the backbone and the major economic stimulator of any economy. So the PST, and there's been some criticism and discussion, which there always is in politics, will help stimulate that. And for those that, you know, question that, I would remind them of the GST holiday on home renovations that the federal government implemented a few years ago. It was one of the most successful stimulus packages we had seen in recent history. And we anticipate that for a year, zero PST will do the same thing. And it will also, removing a 2% small business tax will help small businesses when they need it the most. The 2% doesn't sound like much to some, but in some cases that could be the difference of hanging on or not being able to hang on. And then we've also talked about for the hospitality industry doing some bridge loans to get them through and the tourism industry, because they've been hit probably the hardest of all. I think that 0% PST based on past history will be a very great economic stimulator because it gives people basically an extra 7% to spend as they wish. And there's been criticism of, you know, you go buy yachts. Well, that's not going to happen really, because there is a cap of $125,000, which sounds like a lot, but it's been proven that a sales tax actually has the highest burden on middle and lower income families, because they spend the vast majority of their money, if not all, just trying to get by. So percentage wise, they actually spend more, because those with great wealth throw it in banks and investments, which they're not spending all of their income. They actually have some that they save. So the rich will pay 7%, but the people that will benefit from it the most will be lower and middle income families, according to the studies and stats that I've read.
Okay. We're also facing a second health emergency, the opiate crisis, the overdose crisis. How would the Liberal government and you as an MLA, if elected, deal with that differently than the NDP has?
Well, you know, the first thing is we're looking at as the health crisis that it is. And I was quoted early on when I was the mayor as saying, you know what, if you're a drug user, you're doing a criminal act. And what do you do with criminals? You lock them up. And, you know, I regret saying that. And I learned very soon after that this was, in fact, a health crisis. And there have been other countries such as Portugal that have done this, where they've looked at treating it as a health crisis and been very, very successful. And I have no qualms saying I was 100% wrong in my stance at the time, and I quickly changed my tune. And I, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I was the first mayor to actually push for harm reduction in this city at a time when, you know, needle exchange was a very hotly debated topic. But I knew that pushing forward that this was a health issue, the opioid crisis would be the same. And our government is dedicated to doing exactly that, treating it as a health crisis, and helping people overcome their addictions. And that's, you know, treating it as such as part of that. And I look forward to being part of that solution. And I have no qualms admitting when I was wrong, and that was definitely one of them. But I do believe that this is the right path to go moving forward.
Highway 1 is a major issue, the extension of Highway 1. How would you deal with that issue, even though it's been going back and forth from government to government, and not much has been done on that?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because when I was the mayor, I had all three levels of government, federal, provincial, and municipal together. And we identified as widening that as our number one priority. And it had been widened or agreed to be widened all the way to Whatcom Road. The NDP, when they got elected, actually squashed that. And we've been very clear. Not only will we widen the number one freeway, but we'll also take in immediately all the studies have been done to help with traffic gridlock at the Massey Tunnel. Work on that bridge going over top of there. The studies have been done. Basically, we just need to throw that out for tender and we can start construction on all of those projects virtually right away. And I'm not satisfied, I'll tell you, with widening it to Whatcom. I think that it should be widened all the way to Chilliwack. I think at the same time, however, we need to look at some form of rapid transit up and down the valley. It already extends all the way to Surrey. It's been proposed to go to Langley, and I cheer that on. I think that's great, no matter who builds it. And I want to see it go all the way to Hope so that we actually have something for the generations in the future to get up and down this valley and have an alternative rather than hopping in a car if you live in this end of the world, this end of the valley. So I push forward with that. And for those that say widening the freeway is maybe not the right thing to do, well, you know, that freeway was finished in 1964 and it's been remained four lanes ever since, for the most part, at least in this end of the valley. And we are the transportation corridor for the Vancouver port. These goods and services, or goods rather, have to get up and down the freeway. People have to be able to get out to work. And the population has more than tripled since 1964. It's long overdue. And I will keep pushing for not only the freeway to be widened, which will allow buses, because one of those will be an HOV lane, to move in a timely manner. But let's get on with building rail or rapid transit of some kind as well.
Okay, my last question for you before I hand it over to Ali is about diversity. As you know, your writing is one of the most diverse in British Columbia. Has political parties done enough to encourage diversity?
No, I don't think we have. I think we've done a lot, and I think we're very sensitive about that. But this is going to be something that's ongoing. And, you know, my best friend from high school actually just recently passed away, and he was African-American. And he grew up in LA.
Sorry about that, Michael.
Well, thank you. I remember when I was about 12, maybe 13, we used to hang together all the time. And, you know, it was, you know, a part of my adolescence is now gone. But I remember at 13, it was the rise of Michael Jackson and Diana Ross and Soul Train on TV, and Motown was, you know, and I looked at him once and I said, hey, you know what? It must be really cool to be black. And he looked at me like I had three heads. Because we grew up in Chilliwack. He was really, you know, there was not a lot of African Americans that lived in Chilliwack at that time. And for the first and only time, he told me what it was like growing up in LA being black. Now, I can't tell you exactly what he said, but I remember the hurt in his eyes and the look on his face and the tone in his voice. And I think the more that we can do to help with discrimination of any kind, the better. And political parties, I think, need to lead the charge for that and work harder at it and push harder for more acceptance. I've said many, many times, there's more than enough hate in the world. What we need a lot more of is love and understanding. And you know what? In his memory, I'm going to do my part. And I've done great inroads in this community. And I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world at times. I have been embraced, in particular, by the Punjabi community. And I'm very grateful for that. And I look at how can we, you know, get rid of racism and discrimination. There's just no place in it. And if we don't listen to one another and don't respect one another, I would say to those, look to what happens in the United States right now. There is a tinderbox down there that is ready to explode. And I am thankful that Canada is a much kinder, more gentle, more rational nation. Is it perfect? No, it's not. But let's keep moving forward. And as a political, all political parties, I think they're pretty much in agreement that there's still a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Bruce.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to go back to something you said earlier. You mentioned a comment that you made in the past that you regretted and that you've learned since then. There was another scandal that was associated with you that you've since apologized for, and I'd like to talk about it. It was in 2013 when city staff were found spreading manure on land used by the homeless. That caused quite a controversy. Do you want to provide a statement on that incident now within the context of running for the election?
Absolutely, I do. And thank you so much because it's come up. So it gives me a chance to sort of set the record straight on that. That morning, Deb Lowell from the Salvation Army phoned me and said, "Are you in your office?" And I said, "Yeah." She came up and said, "Do you have any idea what's going on?" And I said, "Going on where?" And a lot of people think that the mayor knows absolutely everything that's going on at all times. And she told me what was going on, and I was absolutely horrified. And I knew then that this was not going to be a great day for anybody. In particular, it was, you know, going to be a blight on Abbotsford, and it was the wrong thing to do. Now, I apologized for that, even though this thing was FOI'd extensively, which means freedom of information. So the press of Alcorns, I remember handing in my cell phone, and they went through every document that they could find. And it was proven that I did not know what was going on. And, you know, there are people that say, well, the mayor should have. Well, actually, no, mayors don't get involved in the day-to-day operations. What we do is set policy. The city manager at this point, I don't think, if memory serves me right, was even aware of what was going on. But as the leader, it's up to me to take responsibility for what was going on. I apologize for it then. It was an incredibly stupid thing to do. But the best of people make really bad mistakes. And that's what happened. As the leader, I stood in front of cameras and I apologized. We learned from it. And the relationship since that point, you'll never see anything like that happen in Abbotsford again. And it, you know, and I understand people's outrage on it because it was the symbolism of what was said. Now, people have said there was a bunch of people there that there was not. There was no one there and there were no belongings there. It had all been removed. But that doesn't matter. And, you know, I have said many times, you Google my name, it's one of the first things that come up. I can't say that I'm happy about that or anyone that knows me about that is happy about it. And the citizens of this city and the homeless in particular deserved better than that. Homelessness is an incredibly complicated issue. It's not black and white at all. There are many, many reasons why people end up homeless. And now with opioids in particular, it's reaching, you know, catastrophic numbers. And the death rate, you know, it's worth knowing that the death rate at times was outpaced the COVID death rates that were in British Columbia. We've got to look at this issue differently. We've got to look at ways to get people into treatment, to get them housing, and to figure out what their particular underlying cause for homelessness is and do what we can to put it right and to correct it and rectify it. And so what the city did is we have implemented a homeless task force. We actually have a homeless coordinator that works hand in hand with different organizations. We have built a number of shelters since then. And we also work extensively with Fraser Health and other organizations to help with not only homelessness in particular, but also the opioid crisis that goes along with it. We have done an awful lot with the various groups including the Abbotsford Police Department, to try and find solutions for homelessness in very, very trying times. This is a problem that's plagued most of Canada, and in particular, the Fraser Valley. Since I was the mayor, the homeless numbers were about in the mid 150 mark, and they're now surpassed over 400. Something has to be done, and I would like to be part of that solution.
Could you give me some examples of the concrete initiatives you'd like to see put in place in the Valley to address that?
Well, I think the number one, I think that one of the things that I find hopeful is having an actual coordination with a healthcare provider that goes out. One of the reasons why I pushed, for instance, for harm reduction needle exchange is because those that are addicted to drugs, that require needles at least, have an opportunity to talk with a healthcare provider on a regular basis. And even if it's just to an exchange needles, what happens is you start to build up trust. And by doing that, when someone reaches that point where they say, look, I don't want to live like this anymore, and they have those moments that they have a healthcare, a connection that can do that. And I know that under Andrew Wilkinson, you got to remember, he's a medical doctor and I'm a chiropractor. This is one of his initiatives that he wants to see some concrete things. But I think having a team that goes out into the community is one of those very concrete things that can actually be highly effective if done properly. I also think, as I mentioned earlier, by looking at places around the world, what have they done? We don't necessarily have to invent a brand new, invent the wheel, so to speak. We can copy what successful initiatives have done, or what's called best practices in other parts of the world. Housing First, it would be an example of that. And Abbotsford has done that. We've got a few shelters. Is it enough? No, it's not. And I would say that for the shelters and affordable housing that was promised underneath the NDP, they promised 114,000, and yet in 3 years have got less than 3,000 put. At that rate, it would take over 100 years. You know what? People don't have 100 years to wait when they're living on the streets. We need to do a lot more, and I look forward to listening to what better practices are and moving forward with initiatives on those. And we may have failures, but you can't give up. You got to keep trying. One idea doesn't work, you have to move forward and try something else that does. The people on the streets that are struggling with addictions deserve it. And as a chiropractor also, some of those people that are out there got addicted with some of these strong opioids for back pain problems, for instance. And I had a couple of patients that ended up being exactly that, being addicted to prescription drugs, and would eventually end up, one of them I know for sure ended up with a street use. So I think you just have to be open-minded, look at what best practices are, what other places are doing, and start picking away one thing at a time. And it seems insurmountable at times, but you climb Mount Everest one step at a time. And I think this is very much the same way. You have to find one thing that works in one area and work on that, and then move to the next, and then move to the next, and move to the next. And I believe that 20 years from now, we will have found many solutions for this. Looking back, I'd love to say that, in the next 6 months, it'll be solved. But if it was easy to solve, it would have been solved already. But it will take a consorted effort by all levels of government, municipal, provincial, federal, and then also for groups that care. There's faith-based groups that want to help. There are groups out in the street that want to help that have nothing to do necessarily with faith. It's going to take all of us working together to help with this problem. And I know together we can make a huge dent in it, and I think we can solve it.
All right. Great. I want to ask you one more, because you brought up that you're a chiropractor. I think that that's interesting. And I'm curious about how your status as a healthcare, a member of the healthcare system has influenced your perception of things like the COVID-19 crisis and the opioid crisis that we're seeing this year?
There's a lot of correlations. As a chiropractor, I was presented with a bunch of symptoms when someone would come through my door seeking help. I would take a look at what those symptoms are, come up with what's called a differential diagnosis. Is it A, B, C, or D, for instance? And that process is very similar. And you're always open to, you know, maybe what we were doing last week isn't necessarily the best way to approach something to conquer it, for instance. And I think that that constant seeking of, is there a better way? You know, through chiropractic college, through the medical training, is pretty much beaten into you that you constantly look for what's called the best practice. And that's what I was talking about earlier. What are other areas in the world doing? And what can we learn from that? And what can we adapt to what we're currently doing to help? Because when I was working on patients, if what I was doing wasn't working, you don't just keep doing the same stupid thing. This is a healthcare epidemic. And I'm not talking about COVID. I'm talking about the opioid crisis. Forcing someone to use a dirty needle, for instance, was only making it worse. That's why harm reduction, having needle exchange, was the right thing to do. Tomorrow, there may be a better thing to do. And I'm open to what tomorrow brings, because based on the rising numbers, there's room for improvement in how we treat this. And I think if you apply that same logic with everything, that's how you move forward.
What do you see as the future of natural resource projects in BC in 2020?
Well, I am really glad you asked me that question, because it's not well known, but a very dear friend of mine actually has come, and this is, so I want to paint a picture for folks. He's come up with a way. It's basically, I'm going to call it a super battery, but it's actually more of a super capacitor. But most people don't know what the heck that is. So think of a capacitor as a quick charge discharge battery. He's actually come up with a thing, and he worked with SFU and he worked with UBCO. That's UBC of the Okanagan, for those that don't know. And he's actually come up with a way using coal. That's right, coal, as a way to store the electricity produced from renewables, which is predominantly solar and wind. What's interesting is that he may be using coal, and he takes the activated carbon out of the coal and puts that into a storage facility. And this is where, you know, how do we combat this? We're going to have to transition. And for those that are, you know, yelling and screaming for change, well, I go back to why I got involved in politics in the first place. We need to have solutions. Pointing out the problem is pretty easy. Finding a solution, however, is incredibly complex. Now, I believe that he has uncovered an area that could fundamentally change the world, because that has been the Achilles heel of electrical storage. Has been, how do we store what's produced during solar or wind? Where does it go? And there has not been a good solution up till now. And for those that think that lithium ion batteries are good, well, I mean, they're better than many, many other things, but the footprint that they leave behind and what's required to get that lithium is pretty messy and pretty dirty. It's not without its warts as well. So I would say we need to be open to new technology. And for those that have a passion about this, figure out a way to find a solution. And it's not just by shutting everything off, because you can't just turn everything off. There has to be a way to transition into cleaner energy. I'm very hopeful. In my lifetime, I've seen where we could not see the mountains in the valley to where we can, based on how much cleaner the vehicles that are going up and down the valley have become. I'm very hopeful that mankind has got enough brilliance that we will come up with a solution for this. is just, can we do it fast enough? We need to, I believe, have better investment strategies into universities that look for these solutions, because the groundwork for whether something works or not is done in a lab. Let's find the best minds that we have and be open to crazy out-of-the-box ideas that may not be crazy at all. And hopefully people vote to send me out of town to Victoria, but we'll see how that goes. Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat.
All right. Have a good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.